throw stones my way.
Chapter 8. Aftershocks. The queen was weeping into her hands, the sound small and broken in the conference room. Except for Padme, the rest of her handmaidens clustered close around her, doing their best to offer some comfort. Padme hung back, suspecting her presence wouldn't be welcome, and still trying to work out her own tangle of conflicting emotions. "I'm all right," she heard Amidala say after a moment, and turned to see the queen wiping at her tear-streaked face with a handkerchief. Her white face paint had smeared and run, though the stain of the beauty marks and the scar of remembrance remained untouched. "I'm fine. I need to get back to the war room." "Hold still, Your Highness," one of the handmaidens said, producing a fresh jar of face paint from somewhere inside her robes. Amidala dabbed at her eyes one last time, then tilted her chin up and straightened her back, twisting the handkerchief in her hands while her handmaidens fixed her face paint. By the time they finished, only a few minutes later, it was impossible to tell that she had been crying. "Obi-Wan will be all right, my lady," Sabe said quietly, the less formal address of "my lady" instead of "your majesty" or "your highness" was an indication of how close they were. She tilted a mirror up so that Amidala could see her face. "He always is." "I know," Amidala said, her voice thin and a little breathy from fear. One hand went to her still flat stomach for an instant, then she swallowed and stood up, handing the dirtied handkerchief to Irthai. "What just happened doesn't go outside this room," she ordered. "No one else is to know. Is that understood?"
Yes, Your Majesty,
the handmaidens chorused. Padme didn't say anything, but she saw Amidala's gaze go to her, her grief replaced for an instant with calculation. Then the queen swept away, shaking out her skirts, and went back into the war room. "What did I miss?" she asked calmly. Padme rejoined Rex at the holodisplay table, showing Feed. There were still droid fighters in the air, but the Naboo starfighters were hunting them down relentlessly, sending showers of superheated metal raining down on the city's shields, where they were instantly vaporized.
"Everything all right, m'lady?"
Rex asked her quietly. Padme shook her head. "No, but I can't tell you now."
"Most of the Federation warships have disengaged and jumped to hyperspace, Your Majesty," reported an officer. "One frigate, 3 heavy cruisers, and 2 light destroyers are too badly damaged to jump. Constellation wants to know if they should be destroyed or boarded."
"Boarded, if the Marines agree that it can be done without too much risk to life," Amidala said. "Federation ships are usually droid crewed, but there should be a few organic officers on the bridge. I want prisoners. If Commander Jallo thinks that many boarding operations are too dangerous, I want the frigate's officers. But the home fleet can blow the others to kingdom come."
"Yes, Your Majesty."
At a nod, one of the communications specialists relayed that to the home fleet. Padme glanced at the holodisplay of the system to see the ships of the home fleet moving in on the wounded Federation ships.
"The orbital space docks around Ulmadun received damage but are still mostly operational," the officer continued. "The central spaceport took heavy fire. Damage in the city hasn't been assessed yet. Our starfighters are still picking off the last of the vulture droids, but all hyenas have been destroyed. At least one of the plasma refineries has been completely destroyed. 6 more sustained major damage, but containment is holding. There's a possibility of hostile forces on the surface. Landing craft were shot down, and we have unconfirmed reports of battle droids exiting them. Reports from Rory indicate that the Federation attempted to attack the shipyards, but their bombers were destroyed before they could do so.
Amidala nodded. Besides the lunar installations, was Theed the only target?
We have no reports of any other attacks elsewhere on the planetary surface, Your Majesty.
Casualties?
Reports still coming in. But we've lost 2 light cruisers, a heavy cruiser, and a destroyer from the home fleet. Constellation and Indefatigable report that 2 other ships may need to be scuttled. At least 12 fighters have been lost on the planet. No numbers from the Battlestars yet. RSNFC barracks was hit. Planetary Defense HQ was hit with a proton bomb. Everything above ground was vaporized, but Commander Panaka and Governor Bibble reported in from the bunkers. The east wing of the palace is gone.
Amidala put a hand to her mouth, but all she said was, I never did like the decor, and at least there shouldn't have been anyone there at this hour.
What about the city?
The officer came over to the holo display table Padme was standing at, Amidala following him.
About 40% of the city is on fire, but from initial reports, the air raid sirens gave enough warning that most civilians were able to make it to the public shelters.
How remarkable that they were kept up after the occupation ended, Congressman Palpatine remarked. Wasn't that on Captain Kenobi's advice?
Amidala gave him a sharp look, but Palpatine just blinked innocently at her.
Emergency crews?
Responding, the officer said.
And he paused, listening to something on his comlink.
Captain Kenobi reports that all enemy fighters and bombers have been destroyed. Ground forces have engaged the battle droids that made it off the crashed warship. Captain Typho is requesting air support, and Captain Kenobi is diverting his squadron from the city to provide it.
Very good, Amidala said. Her hands were in fists, half hidden in the folds of her red skirts.
Your Majesty, called the communications officer. We're getting a transmission from the Gungan Alliance. They're offering their sympathy and their aid in rebuilding. Incoming transmission from Governor Otroff, the same.
Rabe was speaking into her comlink.
Holonews is asking for a statement, Your Majesty.
Amidala nodded, glancing at the chrono.
Ertai, do you have that speech finished yet?
Here, Your Majesty.
Ertai passed to the data pad she'd been working on. Amidala looked it over and nodded.
Tell Holonews 10 minutes, Amidala said. I'll do it from the conference room.
She handed the data pad back, smoothing her palms down along the sides of her skirts. For the first time, Padme saw the wedding band on her left hand. She hadn't noticed it before, assuming it was just another piece of jewelry. She didn't wear a wedding band herself, but she supposed that Amidala didn't have any reason to keep her marriage a secret.
Your Majesty, I can do that, Palpatine said smoothly. There's no need for you to...
I am the queen, my lord, Amidala said, sounding irritated. The people need to hear from me, not the delegate to the Confederate Congress.
She glanced away from him, deliberately dismissive. Updates?
Padme kept watching Palpatine.
Apparently, considering himself unobserved, almost everyone else's attention was on the queen.
He was scowling at Amidala's back, a brief, ugly expression that chilled Padme to the bone.
He's up to something, she realized, with sudden, terrifying certainty. I don't know what, but he's up to something. And she doesn't realize how much danger she's in.
Palpatine, maybe conscious of Padme's gaze, glanced at her. But by then she was frowning at the holodisplay table, asking Rex something about the urban defense batteries. She looked up again, watching him through her lashes, as he turned away with every sign of deference towards Queen Amidala.
She's a separatist, Padme thought, studying the queen's profile as she pointed towards one of the cracked tactical displays. She killed Jedi. Or ordered them killed, which is the same thing. But she had told them the truth, or at least the truth as she understood it, and she had wept for the man she loved before getting up to do her duty to her people, without being able to show her grief publicly. Padme herself could have done no less. Would have done no less. She couldn't decide if it didn't make sense or if it made all too much sense. And the Trade Federation's attack hadn't proven anything to her either way, since it was just the same kind of mad cruelty that Newt Gunray was prone to in her own universe. Had been prone to. If it was kind and had offered up this one goodness to balance all the other deaths that had resulted from Palpatine's code word retribution. She glanced at Congressman Palpatine again. Her Supreme Chancellor Palpatine had had code word retribution. The Emperor Palpatine that Anakin had met in the other universe had had Order 66. So what did this one have? Do you really want to stay here long enough to find out, Padme? The holodisplay in front of her flickered as it updated, showing fresh reports of damage in the bombarded sectors of the city. Her city, Padme thought, reaching into the hologram to pull up a damage report for the Vidaria Canal, one of her favorite neighborhoods in Theed. Above it, the small figures of the Naboo starfighters flitted back and forth, human, or mostly human, eyes updating reports with the data no computer would ever consider. Civilians were beginning to emerge from what the hologram had labeled as emergency bomb shelters. Yes, Padme realized. Yes, I do. This is my planet, too. The Jedi weren't the only ones willing to fight for people they didn't even know. From the air, all bombarded cities looked the same. Well, that wasn't strictly true. Anakin had seen enough cities in the aftermath of aerial bombardment. Orbital bombardment was a crime against civilization that hadn't yet been breached by the Separatists. To know that each city had its own unique character, and even when there was little more than rubble left behind, it was impossible to mistake the crystal cities of Christophsis for the mud brick villages of Ryloth, or the organic settlements of Felucia. But there was an unmistakable sameness to a ruined city. Something bleak about the devastation left behind, after all the bombs had fallen and the enemy had fled or been destroyed. Anakin used to think that it had been something in the Force, until he'd heard one of his clone fighter squadrons discussing the same thing. He tapped his comlink. I've got civilians trapped in a building in Sector Gamma, Grade M7. The digital display in his N1 starfighter superimposed a search grid over a map of the city. Anakin and his fighter squadron were working in what was usually a search-and-destroy pattern across Theed, calling out damage to the emergency response crews and looking for any battle droids they had missed in the initial assault. Anakin's professional assessment of the damage done by the assault was that it looked bad, but it could have been much worse, since between the anti-aircraft defenses and the Naboo Starfighter Corps, they'd managed to keep the droid bombers occupied enough that they hadn't been able to drop their entire payloads. Large swaths of the city had gone undamaged, though there were plenty of burning buildings or smoking holes where buildings had been vaporized by proton torpedoes. Anakin's gaze kept straying back to the palace, where two of the eastmost towers had been destroyed, leaving only rubble behind on the edge of the cliff. The war room wasn't anywhere near there, and was one of the safest places in the palace, but he knew that he wouldn't relax until he saw Padme again. Held her in his arms and kissed her to assure himself that she was safe. His astromech chirped an observation. Anakin peered out the canopy of his fighter and winced. Good call, R7. Control, it looks like the levee on the east bank of the Rione River took heavy damage and could collapse at any minute. I recommend evacuating everyone in the immediate area until it can be repaired. If it bursts, we'll have heavy flooding in that sector.
Acknowledged, Red Leader. Sending a response team now.
Thanks, Control. Anakin checked his fuel gauge. N1s didn't have quite the fuel capacity of a Jedi Aether Sprite, but unlike Aether Sprites, they were long-haul starfighters equipped with hyperdrive generators, which meant that they were designed to burn through the fuel they did carry slower than the Jedi starfighter did. On the other hand,
Flying in atmosphere used more fuel than doing so in vacuum. Mostly because they were fighting gravity, wind, and weather. But Anakin still had a quarter tank left. Fortunately, the Royal Starfighters in the small palace hangar had been fully fueled up. Reminded, Anakin toggled his comms to get on the squadron frequency and said, "Red Squadron, this is Red Leader. Check your fuel gauges. Anyone with less than 10% fuel remaining, head back to base. We've got it covered out here." He listened to the litany of pilots checking in, watching two of them break off from the search formation to make their way back to the hangar at the Royal Naboo Starfighter Corps headquarters. His astromech unit retoggled the search formation to account for the loss of Red 7 and Red 9, sending it out to the remaining fighters in the squadron after Anakin had checked it. He called in a report about a fire in what looked like someone's private zoo, wincing at the screams of the animals in the force, and switched to a private frequency. "Obi-Wan, how's it going?"
"It's going well,"
Obi-Wan said, sounding typically unruffled.
"We're just chasing down battle droids that managed to make it off the crashed warship. Frankly, I'm surprised it survived mostly intact through atmosphere, though there's debris for 20 kilometers along its entry vector. You?"
"Call in response for the emergency responders," Anakin said. "So far, it doesn't look too bad. Lots of buildings on fire, lots of rubble, but most of the big stuff was unoccupied because it's the middle of the night, and from what I can tell, a lot of the civvies managed to get to the emergency shelters." Emergency shelters, which hadn't existed the last time he'd been on Naboo. But then again, neither had the home fleet, or half the starfighters he'd been flying with for the past hour. All of them very capable pilots with what was clearly combat experience. "If I was in charge, I'd be rotating them on and off the planet," he thought absently, calling in another alert to the emergency response headquarters.
"That's good to hear,"
Obi-Wan said.
"Most of these droids are malfunctioning. Easy hunting,"
he added, sounding torn between relief and disgruntlement. "Still sounds like more fun than this." Anakin had run search patterns like this before, but under normal circumstances, it was the sort of assignment he'd have to leave to his squadron, while he returned to the command post to coordinate the rest of the mission. But right now, he wasn't a commanding general. He was just another fighter pilot. Albeit one who would probably have to do a lot of explaining about who he was and where he'd come from once he got back to base. "Did this strike you as weird?"
"Define weird."
"What in blazes was this attack supposed to accomplish, besides scaring the hell out of the Naboo? And from the chatter I've been picking up, it didn't even do that."
"The home fleet took some losses, and Naboo has lost some manufacturing capability on its moons,"
Obi-Wan said after a moment.
"I suspect there's more we haven't been informed of just yet. But I'm getting some strange echoes in the Force."
"Me too," Anakin agreed. He could sense Obi-Wan's disapproval, but they were so close that they didn't put any strain on his mind. "I didn't exactly do it on purpose, Obi-Wan."
"Still."
He was interrupted by Anakin's comm panel beeping. Seeing that it was an incoming broadcast, Anakin said, "R7, take over for a couple of minutes," and sat back in his harness to watch. Queen Amidala's image sprang up in miniature from the comm panel's inset holoprojector, directly in front of him. "Not Padme," Anakin thought with a flash of relief. The royal face paint made sure that there was no chance of him mistaking the two. Not Padme, but the woman Padme could have been in another life.
"People of Naboo, less than an hour ago, we were brutally and senselessly attacked by warships of the Trade Federation. Once again, the Trade Federation sought to terrify the people of Naboo into submitting to their rule with a show of force and without care for the innocent civilians who woke to Federation bombs being dropped on the city of Theed. Thanks to the brave sailors, starfighter pilots, and soldiers of the Naboo security forces, we have once more triumphed over the droid troops of the Trade Federation. I am confident that if the Trade Federation ever seeks to meet the forces of Naboo and the Confederacy of Independent Systems in open warfare, rather than in sneak attacks on sleeping civilians, we will continue to do so. We have not yet determined the extent of damage inflicted by this latest assault on our sovereignty. I can tell you that due to our preparations and the willingness of the citizens of Theed to respond quickly and efficiently to the air raid sirens, many lives were saved that would otherwise have been lost. The sailors serving in the home fleet, the starfighter pilots here on Naboo, and the security forces on Theed and on our lunar installations have all acted gallantly and bravely to defend this system. I will not lie to you, my people. There are those who gave their lives in the defense of this system. The names of these courageous individuals will be released to the public after their families have been notified. We must not forget their sacrifices. Now, more than ever, I am proud to be your queen. Your actions in the face of this brutal assault prove that you are the equal of any in this galaxy. The Trade Federation thinks that the Naboo are weak. I know that we are strong. No matter what evil comes our way, I know that together we can triumph over it. I am proud and honored to stand among you, my people, the Naboo.
Damn, Anakin breathed after the broadcast had ended. She's good.
She has been elected queen 4 times,
Obi-Wan said, his voice muted. He was still on the comm frequency.
And she believes it.
It's the truth, Anakin said. Well, mostly. It was another few hours, the sun dawning thin and clear through the smoky skies of the burning city, before Anakin and the other fighters were finally able to return to the ground for good. He and his squadron had returned to the hangar once to refuel, but they had been back in the air almost immediately. He'd eventually found out that the reason the starfighters were being used for emergency support was because the hangar of civilian airships had been hit during the bombardment.
"Attention, all birds, come on home. Repeat, come on home,"
came over the control frequency.
"Drones and civvy response are taking over. All birds, come on home. Repeat, come on home."
R7 chirped an inquiry. Anakin said, "Yeah, I'm taking over," and slanted the N1 back towards the Royal District, just one of a flock of great yellow and chrome birds descending on the RNSFC base next to the city plasma refineries. One of the building's 3 domes had completely caved in, but Anakin assumed that the plasma was contained. Otherwise, the RNSFC base would have already been evacuated. He landed on the field next to one of the RNSFC hangars, amongst dozens of other N1 starfighters. The base, home to the Royal Naboo Security Forces, had been enlarged from the last time he had been there, almost 3 times bigger than it was in his own universe. As he popped the canopy of his N1, he was aware of the sharp, bitter smell of smoke. Somewhere nearby, something was still burning. At least one of the core barracks had been hit during the bombing, he knew. He'd seen it from the air on his approach. Taking off his helmet and setting it aside, Anakin powered down his starfighter and unstrapped himself. He vaulted out of the starfighter, landing lightly on the grass, and wincing a little. He was stiff from long hours in the cockpit, without even the adrenaline of combat to sustain him. As several men and women in ground crew uniforms hurried up, R7H9 ejected from the fighter's astromech socket and rolled up to him. "Good work, buddy," Anakin told him, looking around for Obi-Wan. He could sense him somewhere on the field, but there were too many pilots, starfighters, and ground crew on the field to see him. "Red Leader?" He turned at the question, smiling automatically at the woman who had asked the question. She was tall and dark-skinned, her long hair tucked into the neck of her pilot's greatcoat to keep it from getting into her face. "Yeah, Anakin Skywalker. And you're... Red 2.
Pilot Officer Jaspi Tanreel. She held out her hand for him to shake. Her grip was firm and dry as her gaze swept him up and down consideringly.
Nice flying, Ace, she said finally, releasing him.
You too, Anakin said. Wish we'd met under less exciting circumstances.
Always an adventure flying for Queen Amidala, she grinned, tucking her hands behind her belt buckle.
I haven't seen you around before.
I was working something classified, Anakin said,
and she nodded, shrugging.
So what happened to the usual Red Leader?
Broke his arm in 3 places last week, training one of the freshies, Jaspi said. I've been running Red Squadron since then.
Ouch. Sorry I came in and stole your thunder.
Don't worry about it. Those Fed bastards hit us. I'm happy to have an ace who's seen more action than I have calling the shots.
She gave him a curious look, the question clear in her eyes and in the Force, but the classified had warned her off asking more.
Red Squadron owes you a drink.
Captain?
Captain will do, Anakin said, wondering exactly when he had been demoted.
Well, apparently this universe's Obi-Wan Kenobi was a captain.
It probably didn't do to outrank him.
He was about to ask her where else she had seen combat, when a voice boomed out over the hum of the incoming starfighters and the buzz of the pilots talking to each other.
All right, space jockeys, listen up. I know you prima donnas hate getting your hands dirty, but we've got buildings down and people trapped in the rubble, as well as unsubstantiated reports of battle droids still on the ground.
He sounds like Rex, Anakin thought, amused and looking around to spot the speaker, an RNSF non-commissioned officer standing on the base of a nearby statue and speaking into a megaphone. Then he blinked and looked again, because the NCO not only sounded like Rex, but looked enough like him to be his brother.
Which he was, after a manner of speaking. The NCO was definitely a Fett clone trooper.
Okay, this universe is getting weirder and weirder every day, Anakin thought. Luke and Leia's timeline had been strange, but strange in a post-apocalyptic kind of way, because everything and everyone Anakin had ever known had been long dead. In this world, they were still alive, just twisted around enough to be recognizable, but completely at odds with everything he knew.
The clone NCO was still talking.
Normally, I'm not in favor of giving a bunch of flyboys blasters, since you lot couldn't hit the broadside of a barn without your targeting computers, but we need all hands on deck. You're going to be divided up into fire teams of 4 to clear the city block by block. Each fire team is going to get a ground forces trooper to keep you idiots in line, and you'll be in constant communication with control. Try not to get killed.
Anakin could see ARC troopers and NCOs making their way through the crowd of pilots and ground crews, ordering people into fire teams, and passing out DC-15s to anyone who wasn't already carrying.
Jaspi sighed, checking the charge pack in her regulation sidearm.
No rest for the wicked, huh?
Apparently not, Anakin agreed, doing the same. He had his lightsaber up his sleeve, but something told him that he probably shouldn't use it unless he didn't have a choice. At least he was all right with a blaster, even if he wasn't the crack shot that Obi-Wan was. Just because Jedi didn't carry blasters didn't mean they didn't know how to use them.
Oh, sting! The blaster went flying out of Anakin's hand as the commando droid's foot connected with his wrist. If it hadn't been his right wrist, and thus made out of Durasteel, it probably would have broken. But instead, all that happened was Anakin's finger spasming enough to lose his blaster. He snapped a roundhouse kick into the droid's head, making it stagger back, and thought, "Hell with this!" as he shook his lightsaber down from its wrist holder. It ignited in a blaze of blue plasma, making the droid hesitate just long enough for Anakin to dismember it and turn his attention to the other two commando droids, who were grappling with the rest of his fire team. The brown crewman was probably dead,
if the odd angle of his neck was anything to go by. Jasvi and the clone trooper, Rook, were still alive and shooting, but clearly outmatched. The trooper was trying to shield her with his armored body while she shot over his shoulder. The other two commandos hadn't realized their comrade was dead yet. Anakin flung himself up, bouncing off the wall of the nearest building so that his downward stroke had more power behind it, as he sliced the nearest commando from shoulder to hip. His blade flicked up in a fast butterfly stroke to dismantle the remaining droid as it turned to face him, its blaster just starting to rise before it collapsed in a pile of component parts. He deactivated his lightsaber and looked up into Jasvi's and Rook's blaster barrels, both of which were aimed straight at him. "Jedi!" Jasvi spat, in the same tones of disgust that Queen Amidala had used when she had first seen them. Anakin raised his hands slowly, his lightsaber hilt still held in his right fist. "I'm not the enemy," he said. "You're a Criffin Jedi!" "I'm a friend of Obi-Wan Kenobi's," Anakin said quickly. "The Queen knows I'm here. I'm not the enemy. I'm not with the Republic." It hurt to say that, more than he thought it would, because he still remembered staring down the Emperor Palpatine and telling him, "My name is Anakin Skywalker. I am a Knight of the Republic, and I will live and die a Jedi." He was still a Knight of the Republic. It just wasn't this Republic. "Like hell I'm going to believe that," Jasvi said. "Not from a Criffin Jedi." "Call control," Anakin said swiftly. "Tell them to contact Queen Amidala or Obi-Wan Kenobi. My word as a Jedi Knight. I'm telling the truth." Jasvi flicked her gaze sideways at Rook, who was muttering into his helmet comlink. "I want to check on Kobe," Anakin offered, while Rook waited for a response. He held his lightsaber out to her. "Take it. I swear I don't mean any harm." "Fine," Jasvi said cautiously, reaching out to take the hilt from him. She held it gingerly at a distance from her body, as if worried that it was going to explode. Anakin stepped away and crouched down next to the ground crewman's body, resting a hand on his neck. He was dead, of course. One of the commando droids had thrown him into a wall of the narrow alley they had been clearing when they'd been jumped. Anakin ran a hand over his face to close his eyes. Kobe died as soon as he hit the wall, but he had still felt the crewman's instant of blinding terror in the Force when the first droid had grabbed him. "He's dead," he said, and saw Jasvi wince, though her blaster didn't waver from where it was still pointed at him. "Control says he's telling the truth," Rook admitted grudgingly. "They had to go all the way to the Queen, though." Anakin resisted the urge to say, "I told you so," and said instead, "Can I have my lightsaber back?"
"You sure?"
Jasvi asked Rook, and he nodded.
"Control talked to the Queen," he repeated. "Her Royal Highness vouched for him."
Scowling, Jasvi handed Anakin's lightsaber to him. He slipped it back up his sleeve and went to retrieve his fallen blaster. He could have summoned it to himself with the Force, but he could already sense the beginnings of strain in his head from the constant, low-level use of the Force he was accustomed to as a trained Jedi.
Obi-Wan was probably going to yell at him for that,
but there was no way he could avoid it. He had no idea how to go about daily life without using the Force.
"Are you really a Jedi?" Jasvi asked, finally lowering her blaster. "I'm really a Jedi," Anakin said. She stared at him, visibly unhappy. Rook wasn't happy either, but he was a clone and he'd had a superior tell him it was all right. But finally said, "Thanks for taking care of those commandos."
"Commando droids are our specialty," Anakin said graciously.
At her raised eyebrow, he added, "Literally, commando droids are designed to kill Jedi. That's why some of them carry vibro weapons instead of blasters like battle droids or super battle droids.
They're not as effective for that purpose as Magna Guards, but they're cheaper to produce and pretty effective against most clones, even ARC Troopers. That got Rook's attention. Anakin was aware of his suspicious glare from behind the T-slit of his helmet. They were still using a variation of the Phase 1 armor that had been discontinued in the Grand Army of the Republic a few years back.
You seem to know a lot about it, Jedi.
Yeah, I do, Anakin said. Killed a lot of commando droids. Killed a lot of Magna Guards, too. They both stared at him, undoubtedly wondering when the Jedi had had the opportunity to go up against commandos or Magna Guards in bulk. Maybe in this universe they hadn't. Anakin ran a hand through his hair. Did you call this in? We shouldn't hang around. I'll call it in, Rook said. Jasvi was looking down at Kobe. Do we just have to leave him here? She asked. We have to continue our sweep, Anakin said. We can't take him with us, and we can't take him back to base right now. She swallowed, then nodded. No matter how much combat experience she had, as a pilot, she probably wasn't used to seeing death so close to her. Most pilots died in space or in the sky. There usually wasn't enough of a body left to pick out of the wreckage afterwards. Rook finished calling in the incident. They moved on. Anakin aware of the wary looks Rook and Jasvi were shooting him. What the hell did the Order do to piss off the Naboo so badly? He couldn't believe that they had really tried to kill Queen Amidala. No Jedi would ever commit murder, even if the Council authorized it. And they wouldn't. It was against everything the Jedi believed in. Most people in the galaxy had never seen a Jedi. Didn't know more than what they had seen in holovids or the propaganda both the Republic and the Confederacy put out. In the 13 years that he had been a Jedi, Anakin had been accused of everything from committing dark magic to eating babies. But that was from worlds where the Jedi hadn't set foot until the war began. But there had been Jedi on Naboo, on and off, for centuries now. Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi had only been the most recent. And Obi-Wan, this universe's Obi-Wan, had been living here for over a decade now. No matter how angry he was at the Jedi for abandoning him during the occupation of Naboo, and try as he could, Anakin couldn't get his head about Obi-Wan doing that, because Obi-Wan didn't get angry. He was too good a Jedi for that. He wouldn't have allowed that kind of ugly propaganda to stand. He just wouldn't do it. He couldn't. They made their way through four more streets in the sector they'd been assigned to clear, without incident. They were in the mostly residential neighborhood called the Annalene Canal, in the northwest corner of the city. Although there was relatively little bomb damage here, somehow battle droids had been able to sneak into the city, either from the crashed warship 20 kilometers away, unlikely in Anakin's opinion, or from one of the droid landing craft that they had shot down earlier. That would account for the small numbers. In his experience, commando droids usually traveled in groups larger than the trio they had encountered. The next batch of commando droids they ran into was a lot bigger than a trio. Anakin's lightsaber snapped into his hand without conscious thought, the blade igniting as he shouted for Jasvi and Rook to keep back and provide covering fire. He didn't think that there was a chance in hell that they wouldn't start shooting, but a boots-on-the-ground pilot and one clone trooper weren't going to be a match for a 10-man squad of commando destroyers. One Jedi Knight? Especially if that Jedi Knight happened to be Anakin Skywalker. Was.
Or, at least, he hoped so.
He deflected the initial flurry of blaster bolts back at the commandos, which only succeeded in dropping one of them and crippling another. Commandos moved nearly as quickly as Jedi. And then he was among the droids, weaving in and out of the mass of metal. He dodged blaster bolts and kicks and punches, his lightsaber flicking out in an extension of body and will as the Force caught him up and cradled him.
He was aware to the instant when the last commando fell from a backstroke that cleft through head and torso, two smoking halves of metal falling to either side on top of a pile of dismantled droid parts. Anakin deactivated his lightsaber and looked up, breathing hard, to see Jaspi and Rook staring at him. He resisted the urge to say something snippy about whether or not they still thought he was the enemy, and returned his lightsaber to its wrist holster. "I really hate these guys," he said, kicking an arm aside. "I hope those 13 were the only ones that made it down. Call it in, trooper?" Rook just nodded. Anakin couldn't see his expression behind his helmet, but he expected it was some variation of shell-shocked. Jaspi, straightening up from the relative shelter of a low stone wall, was still looking at the destroyed droids. "I wish the Jedi were on our side," she said, her voice muted, "instead of being lying, cheating, murderous." She trailed off at Anakin's expression. It took him a moment to figure out how to respond to that, but in the end, the only thing he could think of to say was, "Not all of us." It was nearly twilight by the time they finally returned to the RNSFC base. They'd been out hunting droids and clearing up wreckage all day, occasionally punctuated by breaks to eat and drink, and, twice, catch catnaps of half an hour each before being woken and sent out again. Only once Planetary Defense was positive that there were no more battle droids on the surface were they allowed to return to base. All three of them, along with a group of clone troopers and volunteers they had joined up with, nearly cross-eyed with exhaustion. Anakin, who had been up for most of the day and all night yesterday, resisted the urge to faceplant in the soft grass near the main RNSFC hangar and sleep for the next week. Instead, he just stood there, staring up at the two massive statues of the goddesses of safety and security that flanked the entrance to the hangar, until someone caught his elbow and said urgently, "Honey, are you all right?" He turned and blinked at Padme, who looked almost as tired as he felt, though not as dirty. Anakin was covered in brick dust and ash from digging through the rubble of destroyed buildings. What? Are you hurt?" He shook his head, starting to embrace her before he stopped. At her questioning look, he said, "I'm filthy." She hugged him anyway. "But you're not hurt." Anakin shook his head again, wrapping his arms around her and resting his chin on top of her head. He had a scrape along the back of his left arm, where part of a building had started to fall on him, a blaster burn on his right thigh where he'd been slow dodging a battle droid, and a shallow cut along the line of one cheekbone. But that was it. None of it even rated medical attention. "Are you? I saw the palace was hit. Are you all right?" Padme nodded against his chest. "I've been with the Queen all day. We're all fine. Well, mostly," she added doubtfully. "Where's Obi-Wan? Is he with you?"
"I haven't seen him," Anakin admitted.
He kissed her hair, then stepped back.
"I'd know if he was hurt, though. Where's Rex? I told him to stay with you."
"He went off with some of the Confederate clone troopers." At his frown, she added, "I told him to. Clones will talk to each other when they won't talk to the rest of us, and I want to know what they're saying about the Confederacy."
"Probably not much," Anakin said.
He put an arm around her shoulders, relieved that she was letting him touch her again, and looked around for Obi-Wan.
He didn't see Obi-Wan, but there was another handmaiden standing a little ways away, watching them cautiously. Dorme, he thought. She was one of Padme's handmaidens back in their own universe, too.
"What happened?" he asked.
"Do you know why the Federation warships pulled out?"
Padme nodded. "The Jedi arrived. I saw Mace Windu
Shakti, and a knight I didn't recognize, but they were definitely others. The Federation wasn't acting on Republic orders, so once the Jedi had captured the flagship, the rest of the fleet withdrew. She dropped her gaze, frowning. Something terrible happened, but I don't think I should tell you what here. And we should wait for Obi-Wan. How terrible? Anakin asked, frowning. Is someone dead? Please tell me it's Newt Gunray. That wouldn't be terrible, that would be a relief, Padme said. She leaned her head against his shoulder. Was it awful out there? The Queen visited one of the sites near the palace, but her security detail didn't even want her to do that because there are battle droids in the city. I've seen worse, Anakin said, muted at the memory. But it was pretty bad, yeah. Most of the civvies made it to shelter before the bombs started falling, but they started coming out before we'd verified that some of the droids had made it to the surface, and the Queen ordered everyone back indoors. Padme closed her eyes, swallowing. But it could have been worse, she said after a moment. It could have been much worse. That's probably what the Federation was hoping for. Only experience, too much experience, and all of it bought with blood, kept the images he had seen from rising to the front of his mind. He had seen worse on separatist-occupied planets, since the Sepis didn't have the Republic's moral code against killing civilians. Droids didn't care if sentience got wasted, as long as they achieved their objective. We got all the droids, though. I know someone contacted the Queen about a Jedi. Yeah, that was me. I almost got shot by my own fire team. Never mind that if I hadn't pulled my lightsaber, they'd all be dead. He rubbed at the cut on his cheek, then winced. Why do they hate the Jedi so much here? Padme shook her head. I don't... Obi-Wan! Anakin looked around at her shout, seeing Obi-Wan raise a hand wearily to acknowledge her. He was covered in nearly as much grime as Anakin, his hair and beard gray with ash, and the sleeve of his jacket had been ripped almost completely away, leaving his lightsaber's wrist holder clearly visible. Of course, no one was trying to kill him for being a Jedi. Padme tugged free of Anakin to embrace Obi-Wan as he joined them. Obi-Wan looked mildly surprised at this gesture of affection, but returned the hug, turning his head slightly so that Padme's kiss landed on his cheek instead of his mouth. Anakin found himself going still, remembering the kiss that Padme had bestowed on him before they'd both gone running off to the palace hangar. "You were gone an awfully long time," something inside him whispered. Who knows just how close they got while they thought you were dead. Anakin shoved that thought away, torn between, well, if it had to be someone, I'm glad it was Obi-Wan, and, oh, hell no. Commando droids? He asked Obi-Wan, seeing the fresh bruises on his friend's face. Obi-Wan shook his head. Destroyers. And a building fell on my fire team. Are you all right? Padme asked. Obi-Wan nodded, looking grim. I managed to catch it. You, Senator? I'm all right. The Queen sent me... She glanced over her shoulder at Dorme, who was moving forward to join them. Sent us to meet you. Her Royal Highness has ordered quarters prepared for you, Master Jedi, Dorme said. If you'll come with me, please. Where's Rex? Obi-Wan asked, as they followed her back toward the hangar. Anakin hoped that the passageway that led from the royal hangar to the palace hadn't been damaged in the attack. He went off with some of the other clones, Padme said. I told him to. Obi-Wan nodded, pushing a hand through his hair. That was good thinking. Is Queen Amidala safe? He added to Dorme. She studied him for a moment before answering. Her Highness is as well as she can be under the circumstances, she said finally. I saw her broadcast, Obi-Wan said. I'm sure this attack must be very difficult for her. That isn't what I meant, Dorme said. Anakin and Obi-Wan both turned to look at her in surprise, but she didn't seem inclined to elaborate on that statement. Padme dropped her gaze, clearly aware of what Dorme meant, but unwilling to discuss it at the moment. They made their way back to the palace in silence, too exhausted to talk. Dorme showed them to a suite in the residency, the door to the corridor guarded by a pair of Naboo royal guards. Others were stationed at regular intervals in the hallways they had traversed. Although they were all dressed in the same uniform, Anakin was startled to realize that about a third of them were clones. The suite itself was big and comfortable, probably meant for a family. There was a large round sitting room that opened onto a balcony overlooking the cliff face to the south of the palace, furnished by semicircular round couches like the ones Padme had in her Coruscant apartments. Curtained corridors leading off it undoubtedly led to bedrooms, other chambers, and refreshers. "There are clean garments inside," Dorme said, standing back to let them in. "Someone will bring you dinner soon. I'm sure you're hungry after your long day." Anakin slid his lightsaber out from his sleeve and set it down on one of the small ornamental tables with a click, watching Dorme's gaze go to it. "Are we prisoners?" he asked. "Her Royal Highness thanks you for your help today, but would prefer if you remained in your rooms for now," Dorme said, eliding the question. "The guards are for your own protection. This is not a safe place for Jedi to wander around." "That sums up most of the planets I've visited in the past 3 years," Anakin said. "Her Royal Highness may be able to see you in the morning," Dorme went on, as if he hadn't spoken. "Have a good evening." The door slid shut behind her. Padme sank down on a sofa, resting her head in her hands. "Something terrible has happened," she said. Obi-Wan sat down beside her as Anakin picked up his lightsaber and turned it towards them. "What is it? Was the Queen injured when the palace was struck?" Padme shook her head. "The Trade Federation captured Obi-Wan Kenobi and Bail Organa. Nute Gunray was going to execute Captain Kenobi unless Queen Amidala signed a treaty he had drawn up. The Jedi arrived before he could pull the trigger and arrested them both. That's why the Federation fleet withdrew." Obi-Wan swore softly. "You saw this?" She nodded. "Viceroy Gunray meant to kill him in front of her. It was terrible. They'd been torturing him. I didn't see Bail, but Gunray said he was there." She folded her hands on her lap, but they were shaking slightly. "I don't know if I could do what the Queen did if it was you with that blaster pointed at your head," she said, looking up at Anakin. "Especially if I was pregnant."
"What?
What did Amidala do?" Obi-Wan asked, ignoring Anakin's outburst. "She told Gunray that she wouldn't negotiate with terrorists," Padme said, "and that if he killed Captain Kenobi, she'd have the CIS military destroy the Nemoidian purse worlds. Obi-Wan, Captain Kenobi, told her that he was sorry and that he loved her and that she shouldn't do it. Then the Jedi showed up."
"What did they say?"
"That the Trade Federation hadn't acted with the Republic permission when they attacked Naboo, so Gunray was under arrest for war crimes and crimes against civilization."
"Probably too much to hope for that those charges actually stick," Anakin muttered, still shocked by the revelation about Amidala.
"Something hung just out of reach, something that he should have been able to figure out, but he was too exhausted to grasp it."
"Force knows we've never managed it."
Padme nodded, her mouth twisting. "They charged Captain Kenobi with high treason, crimes against peace, and murder. But I got the sense... Obi-Wan, I thought that he and the Queen were more afraid that he'd been captured by the Jedi than by the Trade Federation. What does the Order do to Jedi that they think have gone to the dark side? Do they execute them? Anakin dropped onto the couch opposite her, feeling grubby against the cream-colored upholstery. No, we don't execute our own. Not ever. Not even when they lose their way. Not even when they kill other Jedi. He rubbed a hand over his mouth, tasting ash and thinking about Mustafar. Thinking about the ghost of Obi-Wan Kenobi, and the memories the Emperor Palpatine had shoved forcefully into his head. Obi-Wan's gaze went to him, clearly thinking about Darth Vader. Imprisonment, usually, he said slowly. The matter's been academic for some centuries now, because most Dark Jedi die in combat before allowing themselves to be taken prisoner. They force you to kill them in combat. My friends Quinlan Vos and Aayla Secura once confronted an Anzati knight that had been captured and punished by being put in stasis on the prison planet of Kifex over a millennium ago after he turned to the dark side. What's the other option? Padme asked. Obi-Wan took a deep breath. There's a rumor that it's possible for a trained master, or a group of masters like the High Council, to actually manipulate the minds of others. Not just to wipe their memories, but to completely rewire the mind of a sentient being, to take out the parts that the High Council doesn't agree with, and put something new in their place. Anakin recoiled. That's obscene! I don't know if it's actually possible, Obi-Wan said, looking about as queasy at the thought as Anakin felt. It's just a rumor, and any records proving it are locked up so tightly that they're beyond my security clearance. But you're on the High Council, Padme said, her expression shocked. I'm the most junior member of the High Council, Obi-Wan said apologetically. There are a lot of things beyond my security clearance, including things that probably no one besides Yoda and Mace Windu knows. If I had to guess, he added, that's what Queen Amidala and Captain Kenobi are so afraid of. But I don't know if anyone in the Order today can actually do it. The only person I can think of who might have the training is Yoda, maybe Thrasa. You don't know her. He added to Padme. She is a Nedi master. I thought the Nedi were a myth. Padme tugged absently at the end of her braid. Would the Jedi do that? Anakin looked at Obi-Wan, who nodded very slowly. I think they'd try, he said. If they thought it would stop a war, I think they'd try. None of that came up when Ahsoka was on trial, Anakin said quietly. Obi-Wan glanced down. On the Chancellor's orders, and against tradition, we didn't have jurisdiction then, so none of the usual rules applied, he said. Dooku isn't Palpatine, so it may be different here. By tradition and convention, the Jedi have jurisdiction over all Jedi, former Jedi, Sith, and Force users, but the Senate may insist on trying him as a civilian or an enemy combatant. In which case, he'd almost certainly be executed, Padme said. Maybe that's what he deserves, Anakin said. He killed Luminara and Eeth Koth. Padme frowned at him. Because they tried to kill his pregnant wife. Don't tell me you wouldn't have done the same thing. Of course I... Wait, what? Amidala is married? Amidala is married to Obi-Wan? Padme and Obi-Wan stared at him as if he had been missing something very obvious. Anakin just stared back. Because he had never, Not for an instant in the 13 years he had known Padme ever considered that they were anything but meant for each other. Even in a universe where they hadn't met yet, he'd never thought that there would be someone else. Certainly not Annie Skywalker, who, as far as Anakin was concerned, wasn't even worthy to look at Padme Amidala, and definitely not someone like Rush Clovis or the handful of other men and women Padme had been friendly with before they met again, but Obi-Wan? Obi-Wan!
Better Obi-Wan than someone else.
The pragmatic part of his brain whispered.
And it's not like Queen Amidala is really Padme.
His gaze went to Obi-Wan and Padme, sitting together on the couch opposite him. They had been together on Mustafar when he had returned from the other universe. What else had passed between them while he had been gone? Slowly, and once again ignoring Anakin's outburst, Obi-Wan said,
I suppose it's not really any of our concern, even if Amidala has been using me to stand in for Captain Kenobi.
It is our concern, Padme insisted. Padme, they're Jedi killers, Anakin said. They don't deserve anything from us.
There's something else I haven't told you yet, Padme said, cutting him off. Something important.
Anakin leaned forward, resting his elbows on his knees, and dragged his mind away from the thought of Obi-Wan and Padme together.
What is it?
Palpatine is here, Padme said. And he isn't Queen Amidala's ally.
The Jedi were both asleep. Padme probably should have been. She was certainly exhausted enough that she was surprised she hadn't fallen over already, though she had drifted off in the bath for a few minutes. But somehow, she couldn't. Too keyed up from the day's events to even think of it.
Instead, she sat on the balcony, feeling the warm summer air on her face as she looked out over the floodplain beyond the cliff. From this angle, she couldn't see the city, but the wind carried the bitter scent of smoke to her nose. She knew that some of the neighborhoods where Trade Federation bombs had struck were still burning. At least it was very difficult for a fire to spread far in Theed. The numerous canals and rivers that crisscrossed the city made fire a small danger. She had been sitting for long enough that her back was starting to hurt, thinking of everything and nothing. Maybe she couldn't shake the memory of that scared, desperate expression on Queen Amidala's face after the transmission from the Trade Federation flagship had ended. The Jedi have my husband. Padme could remember it like it was yesterday, the gut punch of hearing about the Battle of Odrin, remembering Obi-Wan's gentle hands on her body as he had carried her to a couch after she had collapsed. His lips had been moving, but Padme had no idea what he had said after those first terrible words. Anakin is gone. He was lost on Odrin. Missing in action, presumed dead. There was an explosion. She had swooned. Obi-Wan had caught her. He had come to her even before he had gone before the Jedi Council, straight from the shipyards and still filthy from his last battle, to tell her in person so that she didn't have to find out in the Senate or from the military casualty lists. Anakin is gone. The Jedi have my husband. Padme understood very well what Amidala was going through. She stood up without a clear idea of what she was going to do or where she was going. Her first thought was to go to Amidala, but the Queen had been up nearly as long as she had, grief-stricken and careworn on top of it. It was much easier to be a handmaiden, even to be a senator, than it was to be Queen. Padme knew that very well. She could have gone to Anakin, but she knew instinctively that he wouldn't understand. Anakin had lost people. Padme's stomach still shriveled at the memory of the pitiful bundle of Shmi Skywalker's body. but he was too young to understand the kind of grief that came from losing a partner. It was like having the ground ripped out from under your feet, finding yourself suddenly balancing on a tightrope instead of walking comfortably down a solid street. Anakin didn't know what that was like. Even when he had been gone, he had known that she still lived, that the world he was in might have changed, but that his own place had still been waiting for him to return. Padme hadn't known any of that when he had been gone. For those 2 months, she hadn't been sure of anything. She went quietly back into the sitting room, closing the balcony doors behind her, and went barefoot to Obi-Wan's room. He had been asleep, but he was already sitting up as the door slid open, reaching for his lightsaber before he recognized her. Padme? There's nothing wrong. I'm sorry to wake you. It's all right. Obi-Wan set his lightsaber back down on the nightstand with a faint click, leaning over to turn on the lamp. What is it? At his gesture, she sat down on the bed, smoothing the skirts of her borrowed nightgown across her knees. She didn't know if the clothes she had been given belonged to the queen or to one of the other handmaidens. One of the dead handmaidens, probably. She had asked after the women who should have been there, expecting to find that they had left Queen Amidala's service. None of them had left. All of them were dead. Sashay and Yane during the occupation, Corday an explosion on Coruscant. Half a dozen others killed defending Queen Amidala from assassins. Padme had had handmaidens die for her, too. "We can't leave her," she said. "We just can't. It wouldn't be right." Obi-Wan ran a hand through his hair. "I admit, I'd like to know what Palpatine is up to in this universe," he said. "Since he isn't the Supreme Chancellor, his options must be much more limited." "He's the Naboo delegate to the Confederate Congress," Padme said. "But since Queen Amidala is president, he doesn't have much power. It's more of a symbolic position than anything else, since she didn't feel able to just write him off after he was replaced as Supreme Chancellor. I know she doesn't trust him, but not because she thinks he's dangerous." "No. Rabbi told me that she thinks he's useless," Padme said, frowning a little. "Mostly because of what happened in the Senate during the occupation." Obi-Wan rested his forearms on his knees. He was bare-chested, tired-looking, but his eyes were sharp and thoughtful. "Everything seems to come back to the occupation," he said. "I wouldn't have thought it 13 years ago." "Neither would I," Padme admitted. "But neither of us had to think about the big picture back then." He shook his head. "We were young." Padme hadn't braided her hair after she had gotten out of the bath, and now it tumbled loose around her shoulders. She tugged on a curl, aware of Obi-Wan's curious gaze fixed on her. "I miss being that young," she said, "that innocent." "So do I." He watched her for a moment, while Padme smoothed her hands over the embroidered arum lilies on her nightgown. "It's strange to think that so much of what happened in the galaxy came out of this very palace. Palpatine used to sit on the Royal Advisory Council before he became senator, didn't he?" "I think so," Padme said after a moment's consideration. "That was a long time ago, though. Before I was born. I can't remember which post he held." Obi-Wan nodded. They sat in silence for a few minutes, listening to the wind outside. Obi-Wan had shut the windows, but the smell of smoke still lingered in the air. Until Padme finally said, "I've just remembered something." He turned an inquisitive gaze on her. "Earlier, when we were breaking in," She had to smile at the absurdity of the phrase, watching Obi-Wan echo it.
You said that you sensed something. What was it?
Obi-Wan's smile fell away.
Jedi, he said.
There are Jedi in this palace somewhere. I thought that it might have been Captain Kenobi, but it can't be, since he isn't here. And I'm almost certain now that there's more than one.
Republic spies? Padme asked.
No, Obi-Wan said. I think it's Luminara Unduli and Eeth Koth.
Padme stilled.
You're sure?
He shook his head.
No, it could be residual, left over from something else. I can usually tell the difference, but not always. Everything in the palace is...
He paused, searching for the right word.
Blurred, I suppose you could say. It's hard to be certain about anything here. That could be Palpatine's influence, I suppose. He certainly had us fooled back on Coruscant,
he added bitterly. Padme frowned.
But they could still be alive.
Yes.
Obi-Wan ran a hand through his hair, his expression distracted.
Anakin didn't sense anything, but that doesn't mean anything, considering his condition. It could be nothing.
I'll ask the Queen in the morning, Padme said slowly. I've been with her all day, and... Obi-Wan, I don't know. When we first arrived, it all seemed so simple, and now... I don't think she'd do it. Not like we saw.
I think she'd kill someone. I think she'd order an execution, but something about this...
It feels wrong.
She looked up at him, still holding a fistful of her curls in one hand.
Yes.
He nodded. Before, I thought maybe... But my instincts say otherwise. And I have learned to listen to my instincts.
He rested his cheek in the palm of his hand, watching her. Padme could feel the night stretching out long around them, as it had that first horrible night when Obi-Wan had told her about Anakin's disappearance. She hadn't asked him to, but he had stayed with her, even though he should have gone back to the Jedi Temple, his own grief terrible, but muted for her sake.
Does Anakin even realize what he did to us? She wondered.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Anakin had never been good at understanding his effect on other people, let alone those closest to him.
And he had been so distant since he had come back. She shook her head, tugging on the handful of her hair again before releasing it. Obi-Wan was still watching her, the lines of his face shadowed in the moon and lamplight. He hadn't asked why she had come to him and not to Anakin. He hadn't had to.
Outside, the wind carried the sounds of the work crews that were still clearing away the worst of the rubble. There were volunteers coming from elsewhere on Naboo, but there were still people trapped in the wreckage of their homes. They couldn't afford to wait for more help, even though almost everyone in Theed had been working in one way or another almost from dawn to dusk. The damage hadn't been as bad as it could have been, but that made it no less terrible.
Padme.
She looked up at him, startled by his diffident tone. Obi-Wan Kenobi wasn't diffident about anything, but this time he looked genuinely puzzled and a little concerned.
Why did you kiss me?
Oh, Padme said. She could feel the heat rising in her cheeks.
You know why. If I knew, he began, blinking at her.
And Padme leaned forward, put one hand on the back of his neck to draw him in. and kissed him. His beard was rough against her cheeks, but his lips were soft, parted slightly beneath hers before he opened them to return the kiss. He put his hands on her hips to brace her as she came up on her knees, her hair falling like a dark veil on either side of them, closing the two of them off from the rest of the world. Padme put her other hand on his face, his beard tickling her palm as she stroked her thumb over his cheekbone. It wasn't like kissing Anakin. Kissing Anakin was like trying to tame fire. Padme always knew that she was as likely to burn herself as she was to warm herself by his heat. Somehow, she had expected Obi-Wan to be far steadier, a rock in the storm that her life had become. If Anakin was wildfire, Obi-Wan was a sandstorm, just as unpredictable and caught between earth and sky. She felt his heart pounding before he started to pull away, catching her lip lightly between his teeth. His gaze was hooded, unreadable, but his hands were still on her waist, easily spanning the small of her back. Padme let her hands slide down from his face to his shoulders, to his arms, feeling the corded muscle there. His skin was warm beneath her palms, a line of scar tissue jarring against her fingers. She leaned forward to kiss him again, and he said, the syllables buzzing against her mouth, "Padme, I can't. Anakin, shh." She pressed her lips slightly against his, feeling him sigh, then let go of him. His hand slid free of her hair, resting against her cheek for a moment. She felt serenity spread through her, feeling calm radiate out from that point of contact. "I'm sorry," he said. Padme touched her fingers to her lips, but for once, she didn't know what to say. She settled back on her heels, pushing her hair out of her face. "I love Anakin," she said at last. "I do." "I know." His gaze was concerned. "I just wish..." No, she didn't wish he hadn't come back. She loved her husband. She had thought he was dead for so long. Anakin had had longer deployments than he had been missing, but something had changed. They had both changed. "I know," Obi-Wan said again. He reached out and touched the back of one hand, resting lightly on her knees. "When he was gone, Anakin learned things about himself, and about both of us, that he hasn't yet told anyone. I'm not sure that he's even admitted them to himself." If it hadn't been for that gift of serenity, Padme probably would have felt irritated. Instead, she just felt tired. "Not everything is about Anakin," she said. "I'm sorry," Obi-Wan said again. He rested his head against the palm of his hand. "That wasn't fair." He hesitated for an instant. "If it isn't about..." "It doesn't have anything to do with her," Padme said, climbing off the bed. "Just me. And you." She hesitated, then leaned down and curled her fingers beneath Obi-Wan's chin, tilting his face up. He didn't protest, just kissed her back, his mouth soft and warm beneath hers. "Padme," he said quietly. "I'm sorry I woke you," she murmured, pulling away. "Don't be." In the warm glow of the lamp, Padme studied him. He was so tired, she thought. A young man already aged beyond his years by war and responsibility before that. All of this had happened hot on the heels of one campaign after another, without so much as a break in between. Obi-Wan's 12 hours on Coruscant between returning from Moonalist and leaving for Mustafar had been the first time he'd been back since Alderaan. But the High Council and the Senate forgot
had forgotten that the Jedi were only mortal. The Jedi themselves forgot that. They were trained to believe that they were more than merely mortal, and thousands of Jedi had died in the war because of that belief. She had seen the other Obi-Wan, Queen Amidala's Captain Kenobi, and even battered and beaten, he lacked Obi-Wan's bone-deep weariness. After Anakin had returned, she had realized how close he had come to cracking in the months following the Battle of Odrin. Brittle and ready to shatter at one bad strike. Padme wondered if Obi-Wan had guessed how close he had come to breaking. She knew Anakin hadn't. "What do you want?" she asked him. Obi-Wan seemed surprised by the question. "You should know by now that Jedi aren't permitted to want anything." "The Jedi are gone," Padme thought, and saw the flicker in Obi-Wan's eyes that meant he must have heard her, even though the words had never passed her lips. She said, "You are a man too, not only a Jedi." He shut his eyes. Once he might have said, "There is no such thing as only a Jedi," but now he just said, "I don't know what I want." Padme could have touched him again, wanted to touch him again, but knew that if she did, there was every chance that she wouldn't leave. She said, "Good night," and saw him nod, his eyes still shut and his hands in his hair, his elbows braced against his knees as he bent over. She didn't look back before the door closed behind her. Padme stood for a moment in the darkened corridor, illuminated only by the round window at the end, and then went to the room Anakin was sleeping in. He didn't wake when she entered, and she watched him sleep for a few minutes, standing by the door before she finally crossed to the bed. He was on his side, facing away from her, the pale sheets already tangled around his waist. Padme leaned down to kiss his cheek, smoothing his rumpled hair, still damp from his shower. She was turning to leave when he caught her wrist with his hand, golden fingers gleaming in the moonlight streaming through the walls. "Don't go," he said, his voice rough. "Annie," she whispered. He was still mostly asleep, but he said, "Please, don't go." "All right," Padme agreed, after a moment of hesitation. He released her wrist as she lay down beside him, taking a moment to sort out the tangled sheets. Anakin pressed a sleepy kiss to her bare shoulder, his eyes already drifting shut again.
"I love you," he murmured.
Padme reached out to stroke his hair, feeling him lean into the touch. "I know," she said.